It was great to hear that little shout from Noah.
Yeah?
I've got a God like that. It's fantastic, isn't it? And those of us who are parents, we'd love our kids to stay in that zone when they're younger and they're just so confident, they're so certain that definitely the God who my mummy and daddy believe, definitely he is my God as well. But unfortunately, as they grow older, there might be times when they come to doubt, when they come to have some uncertainty, when they come to wonder whether the Lord is who he says he is. And maybe that's been the case for you as well. Perhaps you were raised to know of this God and you've come to think, actually, is this idea that someone rose from the dead 2,000 years ago, does it really make sense? Or perhaps you're a Christian, but there are times that you've struggled with doubts. When you wonder, is this really true? Am I just believing it because my mum and dad taught me? Or because it's something I want to believe? Maybe you are a believer, you are certain in your own faith, but there are people in your life who are wrestling with doubts. Maybe it's your children, maybe it's a family member. Well, you're not alone. Right from the start of the story of Jesus, right from the first moment he was resurrected, there was doubt. And in our story today, one man named Thomas missed Jesus' resurrection appearance. His friends, who he'd known for a long time, told him that Jesus had risen. And he absolutely refused to believe. And we're going to consider in this story how we can respond to our own struggles and doubts and those of people around us. We're going to see the reality of doubters. We're going to see the response to doubters. And then we're going to see the resource for doubters as well. So first of all, let's look at the reality of doubters. Jesus claiming to raise from the dead is a big claim. If the Bible said, and everyone believed it was true, then there would be something not quite right. That's not what happened, is it? This story of Thomas shows us the reality of doubters, even among the disciples. Verses 24 to 25. Now Thomas, also known as Didymus, one of the 12s, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We've seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." Despite 10 of his best friends seeing the same thing, Thomas is suspicious. He is not going to believe unless he sees and touches Jesus himself. Even from the start, there were people who doubted that Jesus really did raise from the dead, even those who'd followed him for many years. And that shows us a number of things. Firstly, it shows us that this is an accurate account. Thomas and John had a vested interest in keeping this story hidden. After all, Thomas was one of the 12 leaders of the church for the next few years, and it would probably have been helpful to cover up this story. Surely it would have made a better defense of the gospel to say, we all believed, nobody doubted one bit at all. The fact that doubters are included in the story gives it the ring of truth. They're not covering things up, they're saying what really happened. It also shows us that John isn't writing here a myth. A myth is a story that everybody knows isn't true, but it's written to give us some sort of inspiration. So nobody debates after they come out of the cinema whether there was a real person called Superman or Spider-Man. We all know it's made up. Some people think Jesus' story is like that. It's an inspiring story. Maybe it's got some lesson for our lives, but it's not really true. Who could believe that? But if it was a myth, why is there so much emphasis on the reality of Jesus' resurrection? Now, Jesus is only worth listening to if he really did rise from the dead. In another part of the Bible, another disciple, Paul, says, "If Christ had not been raised, our preaching is useless, and so is your faith." There's actually no point to being a Christian if Jesus didn't really rise from the dead. Either he really did, or he really didn't. It can't just be a mythical story that inspires us. But finally, the reality of doubters teaches us God doesn't close down the conversation around doubt. I remember when I was at university, there was a bunch of us who were Christians and there was a bunch who were Muslims, and we all got on very well. We were all trying to convert each other, so we were quite happy to be with each other. But it was interesting how different the conversations around doubt were between the Muslim lads and the Christian lads. The Muslim lads would hammer us with questions, expecting us to have an answer to them. But if we asked a question back, it'd be closed down straight away. "I'm not a scholar" was a common response. "Oh, I don't really know the Quran that well." They were fearful of their faith being questioned. Whereas as Christians, we were inviting those questions. We didn't always have the answers straight away. We sometimes had to think about them. But we believed that if Jesus was really true, there was an answer. And John, including this story, opens up the conversation around doubt. "Here's a doubter," he says, "and here's how he changed his mind. Of course doubt happens." He shows us the reality of doubt and how we can deal with it. If you're here and you're not a Christian, of course you have your doubts. Believing someone has raised from the dead is a bit of a stretch. All we would encourage you to do is look at the evidence, which we'll talk about a bit later. Too many people hold opinions on Jesus without ever examining whether they could really be true. As Christians, we do know that dead people usually don't rise. We're not that thick. We're quite thick, but we're not that thick. But we're convinced that one particular did, as have millions of people throughout history. I wonder whether you will examine that evidence for yourself. And Christians, the reality of doubt should reassure us too. Because perhaps you struggle with doubt from time to time. Thomas witnessed Jesus doing miracles on a daily basis, yet even he doubted whether this could be true. There are some people who never seem to struggle with doubt at all. Praise be to God for them. But the vast majority of us, at some point in our life, will wrestle, perhaps with the reality of the resurrection, or some of the teachings of the Bible, or whether God could save someone like us. We shouldn't be surprised by that. It is a reality, and it's a reality that God is able to deal with. And we also shouldn't be surprised when people we share the gospel with doubt. Throughout the gospel, Jesus is rejected more often than he's accepted. It shouldn't surprise us that this is a default response in our day too. And that's particularly important for us as parents. We'd love to be able to say today that the Vass and Abbas kids are Christians, they're never going to doubt from this point forwards. But we can't do that. As they grow, they'll have their own journey of faith, and it may be that somewhere on that journey, doubt might be a part of it. And that's quite scary for parents. Because if you're a Christian, you don't want your children to fall away from Jesus. But it's good to know that God is strong enough to deal with doubters, even if it happens in our own family. Doubting is a reality that we'll all have to face. That's either in ourselves or in those we love. Okay, so Thomas's story shows us the reality of doubters, but it also shows us the response Jesus gives to doubters. The response to doubters. Look at verses 26 to 28. "A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, 'Peace be with you.' Then he said to Thomas, 'Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe.' Thomas said to him, 'My Lord and my God.'" Thomas goes on this journey from doubt to faith. How does he get there? Well, I'm going to summarize Jesus' response in three P's that I think can work for us too. There's his peace, there's proof, and then there's a bit of a push. He begins with peace. When he appears to Thomas, he doesn't say, "Right, I heard someone in this room has been doubting. That's it, you're out of the disciples." No, he says, "Peace to you." Which was exactly the same thing he said to the other disciples the previous day. Peace is a big concept in the Bible. It's the result of what Jesus did on the cross. All human beings have rejected God, and so there is a conflict between us and God. Jesus took the punishment for our rejection of God, bringing us peace. And because Jesus died, sin has been paid for, and peace with God is possible. Isn't it significant that he said this to Thomas while he doubted? Thomas's doubt needed to be dealt with, But he needs to know that it doesn't change his relationship with God. Thomas is already at peace with God through what Jesus did for him on the cross. And he needs that reassurance. And Christians, this is a great encouragement to us as well. Do not think that the second a doubting thought comes into your mind, that's it, your relationship with God is ruptured. Jesus still gives you peace. He still covers your sin, even the sin of unbelief. Start from that basis. If you're a doubter, Jesus says to you this morning, peace to you. Just as much as he'd say to the person who is 100% certain. And Christians, this peace should also explain the way that we should respond to those who have doubts. We can convey that peace towards them. If we panic or we get aggressive, it doesn't really convey that peace. Imagine a child admitting to their parents that they doubt. The response isn't, right, young man, you're grounded until you get baptized. No, we say, I still love you, and I believe Jesus still loves you. I will hope and pray that one day you might come to see that for yourself. We start with peace. But then there needs to be proof. Thomas is given here the proof he desires. Put your finger here, see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Thomas gets the evidence that he needs. Jesus doesn't think it's beneath himself to prove that he raised from the dead. Now, we'll discuss a little later that we don't get the same proof as Thomas and why that is. But there is a good reason to believe the resurrection if you look at the evidence. And as Christians, we can point to the proof that Jesus has given when someone is doubting. We'll think a bit more about that in the response, in the resources later on. So Jesus' response is peace, proof, but finally, a little bit of a push. He says at the end in verse 27, stop doubting and believe. It's almost as if Jesus is saying, now I've given the evidence, the correct response is to believe. And Thomas' response shows us what is meant by belief, not just saying this is true, but it changes his relationship to Jesus. He says, my Lord and my God. He says Jesus is Lord, that is the master of his life, the one who gets to control all the aspects of his life, the one who commands. That Jesus is God, the first time he's acknowledged as God in John's gospel by someone else. But most importantly, he says, my Lord and my God. He says, I don't just believe that you rose, I don't just believe that you're God, but I believe that you're my God who died and rose for me. Some of you still have questions to ask, and we'd invite you to ask them. But some of you have had them answered, but you've not taken that step of belief. Not in the sense Thomas did. Where we say, okay, since Jesus really did die and really did rise, it's going to change me. He must be my master and my God. My whole life must belong to him. Perhaps you're at that stage this morning. If you are, then Jesus is calling to you through this passage, stop doubting and believe. Stop being that person sat on the fence and trust in me. And Christians, we must do this in evangelism. We must convey the peace of Jesus. We must convey the proof of Jesus. But we must also get across that push of Jesus too. This message demands a response. People won't always respond the way that we want. But don't neglect to call people to stop unbelieving and start believing. That's what Jesus would have us do. Now the key is all those three things working together. If we only give peace, then we'll be loving and accepting, but not willing to tell people they're wrong. If we only give proof, then it'll just become an intellectual exercise. If we only give a push, then it'll be emotional pressure without any teaching of the truth. But with peace, proof, and that push working together, we're responding the way Jesus would respond to those who doubt. So we've done the reality of doubters, the response to doubters, but finally we have the resource of doubters. People often ask for a resource when they're doubting. I want a website or a book or a YouTube video that's going to answer all the questions that I have. The shorter, the better. And how many of those things can be helpful? And if you've got a specific question, it might be good to ask people for suggestions. But there is one resource that stands out above all others. Now, we don't get the resource Thomas had, which was a real physical encounter with the risen Lord Jesus. That would be great, wouldn't it? But unfortunately, like with many things in life, we can't see and touch it for ourselves. How do you know that there's a war going on in Iran right now? Most of you, unless Ben's here hidden away this morning, most of you have never been to Iran. You've never felt a bullet in your side. You've never seen a destroyed building. You could theoretically go and travel to Iran for yourself to confirm that it really did happen. But most of us don't behave like that. We look at the evidence we have. We talk to Iranian witnesses. We look at the evidence on our TV screens from the journalists. We listen to reliable eyewitness testimonies. We don't have to see everything with our own eyes to believe it. In fact, much of what we base our lives upon day to day is based upon the evidence of what others have told us. And that's what Jesus is talking about in verse 29. He says to Thomas, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." He's not necessarily criticizing Thomas in that way, but he's saying, Thomas, you've got a special experience that others haven't got, and many others will have to believe on the basis of your testimony. And John actually goes on to say more himself. John's the writer of the gospel. He's another eyewitness of Jesus. And he says, "Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name." John's saying, I'm like Thomas. I saw Jesus. I couldn't tell you everything that he did. I would be talking forever. I've chosen these particular events that I've written in this book so that you might believe and have life in his name. And John wasn't the only one. There are four of these narratives of Jesus' life that are giving evidence of eyewitnesses to who Jesus is. Now you might say, well, I don't accept that as evidence. But I wonder if you've ever read it. Recently I watched a video giving evidence that the lunar landings in the 60s weren't faked. I'd never really looked into it, but I always wondered slightly what the reason was that we hadn't been to the moon for half a century. And there's a little bit of doubt at the back of my mind. But then I saw the video and I thought, 15 minutes, why not? I looked at it and you know what? The evidence was pretty clear. We did land on the moon, I'm convinced. I could only figure that out when I looked at the evidence, not when I was trying to decide without thinking about it at all. If you've read the Gospels and have not been convinced, well, fair enough. At least you've given it a good going over. But if you haven't even looked, what do you stand to lose? Well, you might say there's many things to research in life. Why does it matter? And that's true. You know, the reason why I hadn't looked up about the lunar landings was because it doesn't really make a difference to my life. If I was about to be fired in a rocket off supposedly to the moon, it'd be pretty important for me to know whether it really happens or not. But actually, it doesn't make a huge difference to my day-to-day life now. Well, which is Jesus like? Is he something that you really need to know? Or is he something that, if you're interested, you might watch a video about someday? Well, listen to what John says again. "These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name." We're all going to die. If the Bible's true, there's two destinies, eternal life and eternal punishment. And if you believe in Jesus, you will have life in his name. That matters. Eternal destiny is at stake. Nothing could be more important. So read this book, see if it's true. Not just as an intellectual exercise, though. If you're convinced, let him be your Lord and your God. Believe that he died to pay the price for your sin so that you might have life in his name. And Christians, let me encourage you to use this resource of faith. Read the Bible with people. Particularly read the stories of Jesus' life with people. That's why we read all the way through Mark in Christianity Explored. If someone wants to find out about Jesus, that's the best thing they can do. Read a gospel. Some of you have read the Bible one-to-one with someone who's been interested. There's lots of helpful stuff out there for answering side questions. But first and foremost, reading about Jesus is what's most important. And because of the occasion today, let me encourage parents in particular, teach your kids the Bible. It's more important than the sports club. It's more important than their maths homework. It's more important than life skills. It's more important than anything else. They need the Bible. Now, there are many ways that they can learn the Bible. Coming to church every week. Bringing them to kids or youth groups that can teach the Bible. Reading it every day, perhaps as a bedtime story or around the dinner table. Answering their questions, not just off the top of your head, but by turning to the Bible. Whatever the particular method, make sure that they're in the scriptures. I was raised by Christian parents, and I'm so glad they read the scriptures to me and took me to church. It didn't stop me having doubts. But when those doubts came, many of those teachings that they taught me came flooding back so that I was able to answer them and grow beyond them. And if you grew up in the church, perhaps it's the same for you. Teach your kids the Bible. These things were written so that you may believe, but so that they may believe as well. Why wouldn't you read it with them? Now, just like with anything else, there is no guarantee. Sometimes people have parents who never read the Bible with their children and they come to believe. Sometimes people whose parents read the Bible with them every day reject. It's not an automatic thing. But if we want our kids to see Jesus as the best thing for them, then bringing them to the scriptures is the obvious solution. Which is why I know Ben and Sarah and Reuben and Rachel are committed to reading the scriptures to their children so that one day they might believe too. Well, let's close by drawing this together. First, we see the reality of doubters. Of course, obviously, people struggle to believe. If you doubt, don't think you're the only one in this room. And if you love someone who doubts, don't think that Jesus is unable to conquer that doubt. Jesus is willing and able to fight doubt. Secondly, we see here the response to doubters. The response is not Jesus cutting them off forever. No, he first gives them his peace and then proof and then that little bit of a push. And that's what we all need to. We need to know that in the midst of our doubts, we are still forgiven by the Lord Jesus if we trust in him. We need to know that there is proof that he rose from the dead. And if we look into it, we'll only be more solidly founded on our faith. But we also need that push to not let our doubts consume us, but to believe that Jesus is my Lord and my God. And finally, we have the resource for doubters. If you struggle with doubt, there are many things out there that promise you the solution. But first and foremost, read the Bible. Whether that's picking up a gospel on the way out to find out for the first time, whether it's reading the Bible as a Christian, continuing to read it every day, this is the solution for your doubts. Doubt is real, but it can be overcome. Let's pray that each of us may genuinely be able to sing this line from our final hymn. No more we doubt you, glorious Prince of Life.